Hello, everyone, and welcome into this episode of the Irish NFL Show with me, Colm Cronin. And I am joined by one of my favorite guests to have on. He is always entertaining, always insightful. It is JP Acosta. JP, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Colm. How are you?
I am not too shabby. You were saying just before we hit record, you're moved into a new apartment, hence we don't have the kind of elaborative background that we usually have, but there'll still be plenty of conversation to be had as we approach the draft. We're recording this just about 2 weeks out. I suppose we may as well just kind of dive into it, because you had a really interesting article on SB Nation around Drake May. And he is, I suppose, a quarterback who kind of during the year, it seemed, you know, people were pretty high on him. But over the last number of months, there's definitely divided opinion. And I've heard some people kind of really expect him to slide. Some people talk about they know why he's sliding. Equally, Nate Tice has him as his top player in the draft. You're pretty high on him as well. Can you talk to me a little bit about what it is that you see with Drake May?
So Drake May is my QB1A. Instead of having like QB1, QB2, Drake May and Caleb Williams are QB1A and QB1B. You know, it's really splitting hairs between them. I believe in the latest big board that I had go out, they are right behind each other. One is 3 and the other is 4. It's a very razor-thin margin. But the reason I have Drake May as my QB1 is because even though the results always didn't always line up at North Carolina over the last 2 years, the process has been that of an NFL quarterback. He is a good processor. He has more than enough arm strength. He is such an aggressive thrower of the ball downfield. He has the ball placement to make it work with that aggression. Sometimes it gets a little too reckless. I think the stylistic comparisons to Justin Herbert are accurate, and I also think he has a little bit more recklessness to his game than Justin Herbert currently. I think he's more of, I guess, Justin Herbert with, like, chaotic evil Justin Herbert. You know, he's got a little more chaos to him than Herbert, but you see the athleticism. You see the build. He's a big enough guy. He's a fast enough runner to make it work and under pressure, and that's the biggest thing. It's his work under pressure. It's the ability to find multiple different answers, whether it be running outside the pocket and creating something, or like we see guys like CJ Stroud and Jordan Love do, finding angles and manipulating the pocket and finding throws to get off from there. And that's something that Drake May does a really good job of. He was not given a lot of help at North Carolina. I mean, he had 5 dudes block him for him in this previous year. And I think the air raid offense that Phil Longo and Chip Lindsey both ran while May was at UNC kind of messed with his footwork, because Phil Longo runs it looks a lot like, you remember the quarterbacks from like the 80s and 90s where they just straight drop back, that they just back people out. That's what Phil Longo teaches his quarterbacks at UNC. And it looks weird and it messes up your footwork when you have to try to, in standard dropback situations, when you have to actually like then flip your hips around to get to be able to throw the ball. So it messed with May's footwork a little bit, but that's not something that an NFL team can't work with during the season as he's getting those reps in live fire. So he's my QB1A. I think he's going to be very, very, very good. And I think the reason he's sliding is just because of prospect fatigue. We talk about so many guys. We talk about the same guys since like October. And now it's starting to get to the point where we've kind of over-talked them, where we're finding like really nitty-gritty, minute stuff. And it's like, on the grand scheme of this thing, he is very, very, very good.
Would you have a preferred or an ideal kind of landing spot for him, JP? Or do you think that he is that good that it's really not going to matter where he lands it in so much as it ever can? I mean, look, geography matters and coaching matters, of course, but is there a place that you would think that, you know, this he would be better than in other places, perhaps?
Oh, Minnesota would absolutely be the ideal option for Drake May. With his ability to catch teams vertically and throw the ball downfield, you get him behind an offensive line that actually is pretty good. Christian Darrisaw and Brian O'Neill are one of the better tackle duos in the NFL. You have Justin Jefferson, of course, who is, last time I heard, he's really good. And Jordan Addison, who is also very good. TJ Hockenson is a very good tight end. And then you have Kevin O'Connell, who is really doing his best work in being able to marry the run and the pass game. And he got the most out of Kirk Cousins. So I'm excited to see what he does with potentially a young quarterback. If I were the Vikings, I would be trying to trade up for Drake May, not JJ McCarthy. I would try and trade up for that guy. Outside of that, I think the Patriots would be really good for him. Alex Van Pelt coming from Cleveland. They use a lot of play action, a lot of vertical downfield passing, especially with Joe Flacco. And I think that's something that Drake May can do really well. So honestly, just keep him away from Washington. I don't think Cliff Kingsbury is a good coordinator. I would hate for any of the top quarterbacks to go to Washington while Kingsbury is still there. But unfortunately, one of them is going to have to go.
I suppose that's with Washington, in terms of, I think I last spoke with you on this program at the end of January, and obviously they acquired quite a few players in the interim. What are your thoughts on what they have done this in terms of player acquisition? I kind of share your concerns around Cliff. Do you think they've gone about it in the right way in terms of getting bodies in? And because different people have different, I suppose, opinions on this. I heard, I think it was, one of the Nationals, I don't know if it was Kevin Clark or somebody last week, say they really liked what they've done, because essentially, or maybe it was Solak, talk about they brought in kind of decent players to raise the floor, but now they have enough picks in the top 100 that they can really get the superstars and build from there. Meanwhile, other people are kind of questioning, it's an awful lot of money that they've kind of spent and an awful lot of older guys, and how are the younger guys going to mesh in that locker room? What's your feeling on that, JP?
I feel like the Washington Commanders have done a very Dan Quinn off defense. And I say that because when I look at teams over the offseason, in their offseason acquisitions, the first thing I try and do is I try and see the vision for what they want to do this upcoming season. For Dan Quinn, this is all going to be about defense. They tried to load up on as many of Dan Quinn's style of defensive players. Frankie Louvu is such a Dan Quinn linebacker. He's a fast guy, come downhill and blitz. You don't really want him in pass coverage or diagnosing the run as a true Mike. But that's a Dan Quinn type of guy. Jeremy Chinn, you think of J-Ron Kearse. Now J-Ron Kearse was deployed under Dan Quinn in Dallas. You go and take Jeremy Chinn, who was a better version of that. Dorrance Armstrong and Dante Fowler Jr. both played with Dan Quinn in Dallas. He's just trying to raise the floor of that defense with the defensive signings. And like you said, they have a lot of top 100 picks. You can have another impact defensive signing. Offensively, I thought it's been really interesting because I think they also believe that they're just a quarterback away from being competent. You were able to keep Terry McLaurin to Jahan Dotson available. That's going to be your core receiver group. And then Brian Robinson as your running back. I think they need to add another skill position talent, of course. An offensive lineman would be perfect, like a left tackle, because they let Charles Leno Jr. walk. Bringing in Tyler Biadasz helps raise the floor of that offensive line at center. But it brings into question what Ricky Stromberg is going to do, because, you know, they have Nick Allegretti, who played on the Chiefs offensive line with a torn tricep in the Super Bowl. So he probably came there to be a starter at left guard. And then Sam Cosmi is at right guard. So you wonder who's gonna shake out where in that little guard center rotation, because Stromberg can play both guard and center. So I wonder what's going to happen there. But this offseason for Washington, I really like it because I can see the vision of what they're trying to do. They're trying to raise the floor of the defense by adding impact veterans while raising the ceiling of the offense by using more of the draft picks on that side of the ball. I wouldn't be surprised if their draft leans heavily on offense.
Now, I have the good fortune, I think, of chatting to you a couple of weeks every time after you've been on with Bill Barnwell. And I know you were on with Bill last week, and obviously you were talking about the Jags, but about 3 hours before we started recording this, the Jags got a deal done with Josh Allen. And what's your feeling on your Jaguars, and what has happened over the past couple of months?
Oh boy. It is good for them for getting a Josh Allen deal done. I will say that up front. Josh Allen is one of the best edge defenders in the NFL. And you knew with Brian Burns getting $87.5 million guaranteed, Josh Allen was going to look at that and go, we'll ask for that from the Jaguars, and they gave it to him. So it's good on Allen and good for the Jaguars. However, the process has been terrible this entire offseason. Entire process has been bad. They would have been much better off if they would have paid Josh Allen before Brian Burns, tag Calvin Ridley, and they wouldn't be in the situation where they are now, where you still need a receiver, you still need a corner, you still need a defensive tackle. You could have used those resources better. I think adding Gabe Davis would have been fine if you get Calvin Ridley, but now you don't have Calvin Ridley, and you still need a true number one receiver, unless that's Christian Kirk, which, cool, Christian Kirk can be your number one receiver, but you still need another outside guy Trevor Lawrence can actually trust. Adding Arik Armstead, very good signing at 3-tech. They needed a actual legit 3-tech, but now you need a 1-tech. You need a nose tackle. And I wonder how much Devon Hamilton has left physically. You're still going to need some more depth at pass rush because Kalavon Chaisson is finally gone. But either way, you're still going to need some pass rush depth. So I wonder what happens there. They might address that on day 3, but the cornerback room desperately needs help. This offseason has been, it's been fine, but the process has been bad. I don't know if that makes sense, but the best way I can equate it is you get the right answer on the math test, but the way you went about it was all the way messed up. Like, I don't know how you got here, but you somehow got here. So I guess that's fine.
And of the other teams in the division, because it's a division, I suppose, where, you know, teams have probably been made splashy moves. But we've seen other divisions in the past, you know, where that has happened. The Titans probably being the standout in terms of going out and just, you know, we used to have a program over here called Supermarket Sweep. I don't know if it had an equivalent in the States. And basically people got the opportunity to get a shopping cart and run around the supermarket and take as much as they could into their shopping cart. It feels a little bit like that the Titans, that's how they kind of went about business. But I get it in some ways in that all the money is essentially 2 years. It gives them the opportunity with Will Levis to see where they're at, and then they can reset in 2026. But your feeling as you kind of look around the AFC South, you know, just before the draft, JP, what are your thoughts on where the division is at and the Jaguars division rivals, I suppose?
Well, I think the Texans are the division leaders. Of course, they're going to be the ones to beat in the division, and they only got better by adding Danielle Hunter on the pass rush, being a great compliment to Will Anderson. Trading for Stephon Diggs is fine. I don't think the Stephon Diggs trade signals that they're going to throw the ball more. I just think that signals we need a guy on 3rd and 5 who can get open against man coverage. And they didn't have that against the Ravens. You know, they didn't have that kind. They didn't have that kind of guy. So they went out and got a guy who can do that, especially with all the attention towards Nico Collins. Turning his deal into a 1-year deal essentially means we're going to choose Nico Collins this offseason because he's going to be up for a major extension. So Stephon Diggs can be on a prove-it deal. If he plays really well and they want to keep him around, they can extend him. If not, he can go back on the free market. He'll be a free agent for, I believe, the first time in his career after this year. So it's good for him. Then I think the Jaguars kind of fall into second because they have the quarterback. You know, everybody else has question marks at quarterback. The Jaguars don't. I think they will remain second and in that hunt for winning the division if the others kind of step up a little bit, you know. Then I think the Colts have had a really good offseason. The Colts have done really good in keeping their own around. Because we got to remember, this team almost made the playoffs with a Beanie Baby at quarterback. Now you go put Voltron back there with Anthony Richardson and think about how far this team can go. The defense started around in the form. I think this opened up bringing back all the defensive guys and bringing back Kenny Moore and Julian Blackmon. It opens up so many more ways where they can go in the draft. So where you're not having to go draft a corner or you don't have to go draft another guy like that. They can go draft Brian Thomas if they really wanted to, if he falls to 15. They can go do that. They can trade back and maybe add a guy like Cooper Bejean if they wanted to. It opens so much of their leeway. It opens up what they can do. And I really, really love what they've done this offseason. The Titans come in last for me. I know that they have done a bunch of moves. They, like you said, have gone to the shopping cart. They've gone to the grocery store with a whole lot of money. And they just got paid, and they're going to fill up the grocery cart for the next 2 months. You know, they, go ahead. You want L'Jarius Sneed, we'll grab L'Jarius Sneed. It's like your mom, like, hey, you can finally go get McDonald's this time. So I understand why, but you have to see it from Will Levis. Like, this has got to be the year to see what you have in Will Levis. And I think that's the plan. I think that's what their vision is. We're going to surround Will Levis with enough talent to see if he actually is the guy. If he is not, we are going to be in for a quarterback next year. Depending on what happens with the quarterbacks this year, I mean, Dak is still sans deal. Jared Goff has not been extended yet. Tua hasn't been extended yet. Jordan Love is probably going to get a whole lot of money. Trevor Lawrence is going to get a whole lot of money. So whatever happens with the quarterbacks, if Will Levis does not pan out, they can go get one. Or they can just draft a quarterback. I don't know if I'd draft a quarterback in 25, but they've opened up a lot of room for what they will do next offseason. They have a lot of leeway here. But if Will Levis is the guy, then sure. I don't know if he's the guy, though. I think he's very fun, but very, very, very reckless. It's like he's playing Doom, the video game Doom, where he's just, everything is just, he's fighting demons back there. And I don't know if you really want to see that long term. But, you know, adding Bill Callahan as offensive line coach should help raise the floor of that offensive line. You go add a left tackle like Joe Alt if he's there. We'll see. I think they have done a lot of work in raising the floor to see if Will Levis can raise the ceiling. But I don't know if Will Levis is a ceiling raiser yet. But overall, I think the Texans, of course, are the top. And then Jaguars, Colts, Titans. But this division is really like Mad Max Fury Road. And anything can happen in this division.
Yeah, I mean, it's as my dog barks at the postman outside. But I think one of the things that's probably interesting about Will Levis, the way I would describe him, is we have a snooker over here rather than pool. And you get people who are amazing at trick shots with snooker, but they're not necessarily great snooker players. Will Levis has shown he can be great with trick shots. Now, can he go on to show that he can be the QB? I think that's what's going to be interesting. But you said something there leads me to my next question, because you said, I don't know if I'd take a quarterback in 25. That leads us to a team who kind of don't move the needle on a national level and haven't done for maybe some years now, other than the drama, and that is my beloved Denver Broncos. How do you solve a problem like the Broncos, JP, when you're picking at 12, when they have limited capital, but equally they have a head coach in Sean Payton who is not known to trade back and who is 60 years of age, but we're not talking about a stacked roster either.
Oh boy, this is dire straits for Denver Broncos right now. They are marooned heading into the Bermuda Triangle right now. And it sucks because, like you said, they're at 12. You're just outside of quarterback range and don't have enough capital to move up. But you can't say you're going to go draft a guy on day two because you don't have a second round pick. So I think they're in trade back mode. I think they should trade back, maybe into the back end of the first round, add a second round pick, and then you go take your Bo Nix or Michael Penix on day two. I mocked Bo Nix to the Broncos at the end of the first round based on what I think is going to happen. But if it were me, I would not draft Bo Nix in the first round. I think I'd wait for him for day two. He's a second, third round pick. So I don't know how they go about it, but I think you have to address the quarterback spot now. You cannot realistically go into the year with Jarrett Stidham as your starter. That is not serious football. That is unserious football. And I think the Broncos are in such a weird spot. I think they're very similar to the Raiders, who are also in the division, where it's clear they need a quarterback, but they don't have enough capital to go up and get one. And they also can't really say, yeah, we're going to wait for a guy on day two, because you're running the risk of missing out. So they'll probably end up fighting for Penix or Bo Nix. Michael Pratt has been linked to the Broncos a lot, but they're in a rough strait, especially in the first round. I genuinely wonder if they decide to trade back. I know it's against everything Sean Payton has done, but I would trade back. You need the picks.
And I can see where you're coming from in terms of, because they need the picks and because they haven't had the picks recently, and even the picks that they have had, you know, haven't really worked out, trading up for Riley Moss, etc. But how much do you, like, the history of QB selections, right? You can hit on lightning in a bottle, but usually when you hit on lightning in a bottle, kind of maybe late in the first, it's a Jordan Love situation where he's sitting and he's on a good team, on a perennially good team. Or it's that, you know, a Dak Prescott slides in the draft because of an off-field issue that he had just in the lead up to it. Or are you really, like, where you tend to really strike gold is in the late, late rounds, where obviously, look, Brady's the extreme outlier, and you got Brock Purdy, who goes into an incredible situation. But realistically, the kind of the best case scenario is a Derek Carr type situation, or a situation where Jalen Hurts, and Jalen had a great year in the Super Bowl year, less so last year, but the wheels totally came off, so it was difficult to really assess him. But with Sean Payton, like, the interesting thing to me, I suppose, is Russ came into Denver, he's on a Hall of Fame track, and the wheels come off. Now we get to see what he does with the Steelers. Sean Payton, it was similar, but if Sean doesn't get this right, there's going to be everyone's going to point to Drew Brees, and Drew Brees being the reason for success. If you're Sean Payton, even ignoring where he picks him, are you okay with hitching your wagon to Bo Nix or Michael Penix?
I feel like you got to. You don't have a lot of time to turn this around. The Broncos want to win games now. They want to go do this now. And I think in an AFC where, especially the AFC West, where the Chiefs and Chargers both have dudes, you need to have a dude in order to win significant games and make playoffs. I think they have no choice but draft a quarterback. You can't punt on this year and wait till 2025, especially when most teams kind of feel that the 25 draft class is not going to be as great. At this point, there are two quarterbacks that have really kind of stood out, and that's Carson Beck and Shedeur Sanders. And then after that, it gets rough. So you can't bank on that. You could, if you really are just genuinely not a believer in the day two quarterbacks, you could draft a guy late, see what happens, and then if any of the vet free agents kind of shake out in 25, you go get one of those guys. But I feel like you have to draft one, just because of how dire that QB room is right now. I mean, other than Jarrett Stidham, who else is... Ben DiNucci is in that quarterback room right now in the year of our Lord and Savior, 2024. I don't know if that's a sustainable success model at quarterback. It's Jarrett Stidham and Ben DiNucci, and that is it. You can't roll into 2024 with only those two as your quarterbacks. You have to add a guy, just out of necessity. For roster construction, you got to have three.
Yeah, I just don't know. I think they're in an awful, and it's a situation they've put themselves in. But let's move on from the Broncos, because this is where I need you. I'm a big fan of your work, but I need you to use all your powers of persuasion, because you wrote a piece recently where you're not as down on the Panthers as everybody else. Convince me, talk me into why things are not as bleak in Carolina as they seem from the outside. Because even as a Broncos fan, I look at the Panthers and think, wow, at least we're not them.
Okay, So I say this out in front. I do not think the Panthers are going to be competing seriously to win playoff games next year. They needed to get up off the doormat. They got punched in the face by 2023. And the biggest objective for Dave Canales and Dan Morgan was to get them up off the ground. And I think they did that. They did a really good job. Like I said, with Commanders, what you want to do is see the vision for what they are building. And what they're building is a team that's built up front through the defensive tackles and interior of the lines, where what they're going to try and do is run the ball and stop the run. Dave Canales has said extensively this number 2.7 seconds to throw. That's when he wants his quarterbacks to get the ball out. You know, that's what they want to turn Bryce Young into, instead of forcing him to hold on to the ball and kind of not say be something he's not, but be something that can be sustainable for him at the NFL level. You can't have him hold on to the ball at this level. He's not going to be more athletic than everybody else. So you go out and get Robert Hunt, and you go out and get Damian Lewis. I know they were a little pricey, but you are the Panthers. You have to overpay a little bit. I think it's very similar to when the Jaguars paid Christian Kirk a whole lot of money, and everybody's like, wow, that's a lot of money. But you had to do it because you're the Jaguars, and you just came up hiring Urban Meyer to be your head coach, and you were the laughingstock of the NFL. That feels very similar to what the Panthers are going through. Trading for Deontay Johnson was an incredible move, especially at low value that they got. Deontay Johnson is a great separator in the short to intermediate areas. That's where Bryce Young needs to succeed. He needs to be the point guard of the offense. I think turning into an RPO-based, get him in play action and get the ball out quickly, that can be something that Bryce Young succeeds at, and Deontay Johnson is also very good at that. So now you have a guy who can create easy separation. Defensively, you had to trade Brian Burns, which sucked. He was not going to play long in Carolina. I think both sides wanted that. And getting a second and fifth for him is fine. I know the two first-round picks from a couple years ago is going to come back to sting, but, you know, different regime, different thoughts. Signing Derrick Brown to an extension, phenomenal. I think he is an up-and-coming defensive tackle who played the best football of his career last year. Led all defensive tackles. So he is playing really well. A'shaun Robinson, they're going to stop the run. Josie Jewell was added. Jadeveon Clowney comes back home. So what they're doing, again, like the Commanders, is they're elevating the floor of their team with the vet signings. And now at 33 and 39, you don't feel the need to have to pick an offensive lineman, or you don't have to pick another. You don't have to pick another receiver if you don't want to. I think they should. I think they should go receiver and then figure it out. You know, you can pick another edge defender like a Darius Robinson. You know, you can pick one of those guys. You've opened up so many more areas for your team in the draft that it makes a lot of sense to what they're doing. Like I said, I don't think they're going to win very many football games in 2024, but you can see the vision for what they're doing. I think they're maybe 2 years away from being competitive, but you know, they're doing a good job of getting up off the floor.
Imagine somebody having an idea for what they want their football team to do. I'm interested, JP, you know, just in terms of some of the players that, you know, you are excited to see come into the league next year, irrespective of where they get drafted or when they get drafted. Who is it that you're kind of excited about that they will be playing NFL football next year?
I'm going to start with my favorite defensive player in this draft class, and that's Illinois defensive tackle Johnny Newton. I've been watching Johnny Newton since last year when I thought he was going to enter the draft, but dude is phenomenal. He's consistently in the backfield in the run game and passing game. He has such violent hands and gets so much force through the first few seconds of the play that he just blows up plays just by his first step and violence up off the ball. He gets downfield in a hurry. I cannot wait to see him in an NFL defense where they allow him to be a one-gap player and just shoot through that gap. He is such a disruptive force that I think he's going to instantly produce wherever he goes. Obviously, Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be a super fun player to watch, but I'm going to go a little bit down the chart for receiver. I think watching what Malachi Corley does and what Malachi Corley turns out to be at the NFL level is going to be really interesting. Don't ask him to run routes downfield. That's not his game. That's not what he does. He is the jet sweep. He is a screen guy, and he can break so many tackles. He is like a running back with the ball in his hands, legitimately built 5'10", 207, 210, really big lower body. He can break so many tackles. I think getting him in a Shanahan or McVay style of offense, I think having him be in Atlanta would be really good for him to be kind of the jet sweep guy. I don't think they'd do it now with Rondale Moore kind of being there, but it makes so much sense to get him in one of those types of offenses and let him cook. And I'm also really interested to see what happens with Leiatu Latu. I think his medicals are going to be really intriguing to see how teams address that, but he's the best pure pass rusher in this draft class. He is a professional QB getter. He knows how to get it done. He has such great hand usage. He has such good burst and finish to the quarterback that it kind of makes up for his lack of bend or length. So I'm very intrigued to see what happens with Latu and how high or how low he goes.
And maybe finally, because I appreciate the time you've given, we're just coming off the back of a WrestleMania that kind of gave everyone a little bit of what they wanted, whether you're a new fan, whether you're an old fan, or plenty of star power. Cody Rhodes got to finish his story. If who in the NFL world would you like to see finish their story? If you have a pick, it's entirely up to you. Who would you like to see finish their story in the NFL?
I'm going to go with Lamar Jackson. I think Lamar Jackson finishing his story, I think he gets a lot of unwarranted hate for his playoff performances, and last year's was pretty rough, but I think he is one of the three best quarterbacks to play in the game right now, and another year with without Greg Roman. I think another year in the new offense will help him out a lot with Todd Monken. That's Todd Monken. Another year with Todd Monken should help him out so much, and he'll continue to grow. I mean, we have to remember that this was the first year, you know, in a new offense, and he was one of the most efficient players in the game. So I think the next year for him is going to be really good.
I think that's a great answer. I know and hopefully I'll get it back on soon. I know Jarrett Bailey will answer if I ask him that question. Your knowing nod tells me you know too. So let's see. I'll get Jarrett on soon, and I'll ask him the question, and let's see if he gives us the answer that we both expect. JP, a pleasure talking to you as always. If people out there aren't checking out your stuff, and they absolutely should, where can they do that?
You can find me at SB Nation. I am the NFL writer. I'm a football writer. Basically, wherever football is being played, I'm probably going to be there. You can find me at Acosta32_JP on Twitter, and then at JPAcosta32 on Threads. See what I'm doing? See where I'm going?
Thanks, JP.
Thank you.